Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight-loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight-loss. PlushCare.com/weight-loss.
Well, we're in the busy former docks region of the East End this week, and the big question must surely be, what connects fake pirate ships, alcoholic confectionery, fire eaters and finger food, and a small boy nearly being mauled by a tiger? It's Thursday, the 7th of August, 2014. I'm N. Quentin Wolfe, and this is Londonist Out Loud.
Hey, baby, let me take you down to a place of strange sights and sound. You ain't never seen the light before.
From a windy tobacco dock. It's Londonist Out Loud, and the smell of food should be drifting out through your audio device at this very moment. With me on tobacco dock is Ben Norham, the food editor for Londonist. Hi, Ben.
Hi there.
Now, we've got to get this out of the way, and I know Ben's looking forward to this as a food editor. A potted history of tobacco dock, if you please, for the listener who is unaware of this corner of the East End.
Of course, it's not my specialist subject, but it is a building that was built around 1811, originally used to store imported tobacco. When it stopped being used for that, it lay dormant for a long time. In 1990, there were plans to try and make it into the Covent Garden of the East, which didn't work, hence you've not known it as that. And then in about the mid-2000s, it became an event venue, hence we're here now for a food festival, which is much more my area of expertise.
I think that was pretty smooth.
I'm not so sure.
If somebody hasn't been down here, we could perhaps give a description of the place. It's quite unusual, and not least because of the masted ships that are towering over us.
Yes, it's called Tobacco Dock, and it does look like exactly what you'd imagine when you think of an old dock where pirates might be involved. And I think there are pirate ships round about. Ship behind us has a bust on the front, looking like she's asking for some food herself. It's got a good energy to it.
But these aren't the real deal, I gather.
I think probably not. I'm not sure, in honesty.
I'm surprised this hasn't come into your brief as food expert. So the event we're here for today is already drawing quite a crowd. It is lunchtime, and there's plenty of people turning up. What are they here for?
They're here for Feast, which is, in my opinion, one of London's most interesting food festivals, and it's certainly one of the most popular. It's been around for a number of years now, and this latest incarnation is its biggest yet. It's here taking over the whole tobacco dock for a long weekend. There's food, drink, expert masterclasses, lots of producers selling their wares that they've made in small-scale production in London. It's just a celebration of food and drink, really.
And we're standing in front of an enormous blackboard which lists the vendors, I suppose. Yeah. And, well, a great selection of names here. Penkel and Banks, Mama Jerks, Happy Makey or Happy Mackey, Liquor Licks. Some of these sound indecent.
Yeah, well, Liquor Licks are alcoholic ice lollies, so indecent in their own way.
The Marshmallowists, the Frenchie. Are we sure this is a food festival?
I can't guarantee anything until we get inside, I'm afraid.
Right, well, that's all the invitation I need. What's the plan of campaign here?
So we're going to go round and talk to a number of different producers. We've got a little selection lined up that sort of shows the range of skills on offer. I think we're starting with a bit of a restaurateur from Kensington, Dirty Bones, and going to move through street food to a bar to guys who make alcoholic sweets in their bedrooms.
Okay, that sounds good to me. Let's head indoors. And I should say, as we head inside, we are accompanied by members of the Londonist team. We are very proud to be media partners of the Feast Festival, and we're making ourselves known in the brand new All Singing, All Dancing Londonist t-shirts. Well, some of us are. Some of us discovered that an XXXL is not yet available, and so is in his normal civilian clothes. And we've got what looks like a rather scientific bar there. Some of the drinks seem to be electrified. We might come back to them. The Breakfast Club off to our left. And into Tobacco Dock proper. Well, strangely, the first thing one encounters here is a face painting table, and I don't think that's going to work on radio. You don't want your face painted, do you?
No.
Okay, so we'll forego that.
But ages doing my makeup.
The food fragrances are absolutely overwhelming, and of course there's the biggest mix you could possibly think of. We're passing the delicious smells of Jubo just there. I think we might head back and have a chat with them. A sign advertising black paella on that store. Now, the last time I was here was for a secret cinema production, I think, of The Red Shoes, and the place had been turned into sort of a shopping arcade come entertainment centre from around about wartime, I guess. Dancing classes were available and people playing the piano and so forth. It was very dark and moody. The atmosphere now, though, is as bright and summery as you could wish for. Is this somewhere that you find yourself very often, or is this a first visit for you?
I've been here a few times. There've been a couple of other food-related events and a wine fair here as well, which I've attended. It's very different each time. I think it's a venue that's quite good at taking on the atmosphere of what's here. So this is very lively indeed. I'm enjoying it.
And plenty of pints of beer. What are we, about 12:30 or 1 o'clock or so?
Oh, yeah, beer o'clock really, isn't it?
Now, where are you leading us? We're being pointed towards a store with a stripy blue and white awning, doing a brisk trade by the looks of it. So we are at Dirty Bones, which is a fantastic name for a store. Who are you?
I'm Ross, so I work for the group as a creative development chef.
Ah, right, okay.
Not a title. Sort of a made-up one that I fabricated, but it's good.
You're looking very clean. You're obviously not working hard enough at this point in the day.
No, it's just the last day. I think we've got it down to a T now. So
the team having a good dance while they're
always
cooking.
Dancing.
What's the overall aim of the festival for you? Is it about outreach? Is it simply about selling? Is it about trying new stuff?
We're a new concept. I mean, we're not even a year old yet. So for us, it's been a case of, like, get here, show our face, dance, make ourselves known, and then also to promote, like, we have like our Sunday night sessions and things like this that we're doing a lot of, so it's like getting our name out there, getting people down to our sort of see our DJs and our live music and enjoy the food. So yeah,
so the concept is about what sort of liveliness and bringing a bit of spirit to it.
Good vibes and high fives, that's what we always like. Everyone's in there to have a good time, loads of dirty food that's sort of our modern twist on it as well. So a lot of the boys come from a fine dining background, like Michelin level as well, and so we're using a lot of modern techniques to bring sort of very standard American food and sort of bring it all the way up to our sort of standard.
Would it be revealing trade secrets to go into a bit of detail there?
No, I mean, like, the wings we're selling here today, we cover them in rice vinegar first, which breaks down the proteins in the skin, and it means that when we fry them they puff up more, and then we brine them in a salt solution, and then they get put into Coca-Cola, chicken stock, thyme, rosemary and garlic, and then we water bath them, and that gets cooked for 6 hours in a water bath, and then we take them out, dry them in a fridge using air drying. So you put them in a fridge, it draws the moisture off the skin, and then we fry them and grill them and into a lemon, like a Chinese lemon glaze type thing, so it's really, really fresh. They're like sticky, it's good.
That sounds appetizing, but also it's got a whiff of the Blumenthal about it.
Yeah, a little bit. It's that sort of instilled in you once you've been there a while, sort of part of the way you think. So yeah, there's an edge to it, I guess.
You've been connected with his restaurant?
Yeah, I used to work at the Experimental Kitchen, so yeah, I did that. It was an amazing experience, absolutely mind-blowing. Just things you get to see there you never see anywhere else, so it's just phenomenal.
And was that, I don't want to dwell too much on what he's doing perfectly well for himself, but was that sort of the spearhead of a new way of thinking about food, or was that very much a one-off?
He redeveloped the food, like, in my eyes, like, he's the one that's driven it and made everything what it is today. Like, the way people think about even cheap products and making them as good as they can be, and the ethos of every dish, like, has to taste amazing before you mess around with it, so you get a basis and then you move on and see if you can do anything better from there. But it's got to taste good in the first place. Everyone thinks he's the mad scientist, but he's very smart, very smart guy. So, but I mean, like, with Dirtspin and things like that, we have the same sort of thing. Like, we have pots of smoke and things like this going on using the water bath, but we wouldn't do it unless it was amazing. Like, it tastes amazing first. Mm.
Well, two questions about location, I suppose. The most obvious one is that you're Kensington based, I think.
Yeah.
And this is a far cry from Kensington.
Yeah, it is.
How have you found the crowd? Do they differ from your usual clientele?
No, I mean, for us there, I mean, it's a hot dog on a silver platter is basically where we're going with it. So it's a hot dog with cutlery, a hot dog with silver platter. We have an amazing sea bass dish with whole sea bass. I mean, people love that. Anyone loves that. So we brought a little bit of east to the west and then made it very west, I think. So, I mean, everyone loves it and everyone travels in to sort of come and eat it. A lot of Americans come and try and, like, amaze at how good we get it. Like, English guys are cooking their food. So that's always interesting.
And what about the practicalities? Because the sort of processes you described there sound quite in-depth and like you'd need quite a stable environment. Clearly, there's a lot of throughput going on here. You're in a sort of a makeshift premises. Yeah. How easy is it to translate the mode of production?
That's the main thing that concept builds behind is that, and the way the food is built is, we want consistency. Everything we do is about consistency. Water baths, all this sort of new cooking techniques are about consistency. So the idea being that all the bit where you can overcook and mess up is done. You've done that in your own time when there's no service pressures. So it's the same here. We've done all of this. Like, overnight it's been cooking. Timers are on. Temperatures are set to, like, 0.1 of a degree and it's cooked. And when we bring it here, we're just finishing.
Ah, so this is like all the advantages of a microwave pre-prepared idea.
Yeah, so we have like 5 water baths running overnight every night that keep going and new things in there, new developments going on, so that's what we do at the moment. So
I know you need to get back to your team who are busy cooking away.
Right. Look at them. Beautiful bearded bunch that they are.
There is a lot of facial hair. Yeah. Do you know we're at maximum beard?
Yeah, maximum beard. Yes. It's the quickest you can actually go is maximum beard.
If there was a particular dish you could point us towards, which one would it be?
It's all good. I mean, our hot dogs are amazing. We have a really, really great hot dog recipe. The bun is our recipe. The dog is our recipe. And then all the garnish that goes on top looks very simple, but it's like the guacamole on the Mexican, for example, is guacamole, which has been, it's got Tabasco in it, smoked chilies. The sour cream has been hung with lime zest for 2 days, and then it gets drawn back through and, like, passed through a fine sieve, so it's very smooth. The pulled pork is cooked for 2 days, and then pulled and put in our marshmallow and bourbon barbecue sauce, which is pretty banging. And then served in a brioche with one of our homemade hot dogs.
Ben, I don't know about you, but my taste buds are standing on end.
Yeah, mine too. I'm rather hungry now.
With your knowledge of the food scene in London generally, clearly a new thing is being tried here. How new and how unique is it in your view?
I think it is pretty new and unique. I think it's taking something that's been a bit of a trend for a little while, the sort of burger craze, hot dog craze, dirty foods craze, and taking that and applying the more Michelin level of cooking, the experimental style that you get at typically more expensive and more fine dining style restaurants to that food. So no, I think it's really interesting.
Well, the crowd is building and
stop dancing as well.
Yes, they do. Is that a warning sign?
No, it's just a sign of maybe they're a little bit tired or chef stepped out of the kitchen, so they're not going to dance.
When do you have to keep going, Tuff?
It's 4 o'clock today, so we've done, every day has been sort of a 16-hour day so far. It's quite long because you have to bring the food, prep the food again, everything washing up. Yeah, it's been a long one, but they're good. They're good boys.
You're looking fresh on it, if I must say, as are the team.
Good.
Anyway, thanks a lot.
Thanks so much
for taking the time.
Well,
he was a nice fellow, wasn't he?
Yeah, well.
I thought chefs were supposed to be terrifying, aggressive sort.
So did I. What happened there? What went wrong?
Something wrong. Maybe he's an imposter. Well, we're heading down one of the galleries now, past the strange birdcage structures that we can see down on the floor below. And we're passing a bar here. Wine's going on. Over there, Spicy Island pulled pork, fat bear. Where are we headed next?
I think we're going to give Jubo a visit next.
Sounds good. And now that was we passed them earlier, didn't we?
Yes,
that
yes.
Was Korean street food.
Korean street food, exactly. They're based in Shoreditch, and they're here today serving Korean style chicken wings, which apparently have been one of the most popular dishes so far, and other things as well, I'm sure.
And around the corner we go. We've got Venezuelan food here. Without looking at the pictures, what sort of food would you expect to find in Venezuela?
I don't know, actually. Is it? Am I thinking vaguely Mexican? Am I correct there?
Does it look vaguely... arepa, of course, and
guasa, a bit like guacamole.
Guasa saca sauce. Beef, pork, chicken, and cheddar cheese. Not sure about that.
I wasn't expecting that.
I had like a really odd supper.
I think we could have got through quite a few foodstuffs on our list before we used cheddar cheese.
Maybe it's fusion.
Black pie. Past the black paella store. We've got information on the black paella. It is paella with squid ink injected so that it's black in colour. And I asked our taster what it tasted like, and he said, paella.
I think that probably sounds quite likely. The squid ink adds a lot of colour, but not so much flavour. Although a bit of fishiness, I guess.
That's a wrap, Jubo. Now, there's a long line of people looking at the food at Jubo, and we can see things being fried. Well, here we are at Jubo. The name of the game at Jubo seems to be half of the team working, half of the team milling.
Well, it's now Sunday. The fruits of the labour were really sown on Friday and Saturday, and Sunday we're just allowed to kick back a little bit, let the staff run the show, and enjoy a bit of the festivities.
Now, one of the first things that I notice here is that there's much less beard going on your stall than some of the others we've visited, and a lot of fried stuff happening here. What kind of food are you serving us?
We're featuring Korean fried chicken, which is twice fried wings and strips. It's a lot more crunchy than any other fried chicken you'll find anywhere else. And our queue at the moment will stand testament to that.
Yes, you're bringing in quite a crowd. I've even heard it said that this has been one of the most popular foodstuffs in the festival, and of course you're going to agree.
We can't. Our customers have been very, very supportive, and hopefully we'll won a few more over the course of the week.
Now, where are you based ordinarily?
We're based in Shoreditch and Rivington Street. So we've got an arrangement with the Bedroom Bar there, which is something of an institution on Rivington Street. We've been there for 1 year. And we're there for at least another two. In the meantime, we're also looking for another site in London.
And what sort of crowd do you get at your present place?
All sorts, really. Ranging from students to young professionals. You get the business crowd from the city. And a good mix of Asians and Europeans.
So is this a lunch break type food, or is this on the way home from the club? Or
definitely a night venue. And we stay up open till 11. We've got a new lunch box that we've also packaged up for the lunch trade. But no, we're working towards being an all-day venue, but at the moment it's more night-based.
That's interesting. Okay, because as soon as you make that shift, you've got to start thinking about split shifts and all that jazz, haven't you?
Absolutely. We've got 11 staff at the moment, and always looking for more. But as a lot of business owners will tell you, staff are your most important asset, but also quite a complex one to manage.
If I'm reading you right, you are indeed in a managerial role in all of this, are you?
I am. I am an owner, along with my business partner Leon and Diego. There's the three musketeers, really, of Jubo, and we try and steer the ship in the right direction.
Can we talk about the origins of your journey and how did it all come about?
Certainly. We met together at business school in France 3 years ago, and we all came out with an MBA, and on the other side of it, we decided not to go down the corporate route. And we saw what we thought was an opportunity in the market for Korean food. Not in the traditional sense as far as a barbecue, authentic type experience, but something really featuring around chicken, which is what we're doing.
Because that's what everybody thinks of when they think of Korean food, isn't it? The small platter and the barbecue by your table.
Exactly, and fry your own meat and all that sort of thing. But we've let the experts deal with that, and we're focusing on something that's more accessible to, we think, a broader client and market.
What's it been like getting underway in the current economic environment?
No, it is challenging. We're finding there's no shortage of staff, that we can actually find staff very, very easy. But fighting for customers and fighting to bring people to your restaurant is, I think, as challenging as it has ever been. We're very bullish about it, and we feel we can ride it through and get somewhere on the other side.
I like some of the terms you're using. They're bullish and fighting and very, very warlike.
Well, it's a competitive market, and we're all there to try and
make a bit of a crust at the end of the day.
Yeah, what do you do then? I'm trying to imagine that level of assertiveness. finding its way. Are you sort of going into other fast food joints and kidnapping customers? Or?
Not quite at that point, but no, we're...
You've thought about it.
We've always got our eyes open and looking at what else is on offer around the place and how we can make our offer more compelling.
Could you share a trick?
I couldn't possibly share a trick with you. Who knows who you're going to be talking to next?
Well, that's true enough. I'm going to be passing it on to the next guy. What would you steer us towards in terms of the front? Is it one dish you're producing here? Or are there
variations? No, we've got a range. We've got some short beef ribs. We've got some very nice Berico pork pluma, which is selling well for us. But 50% of our business is our Korean fried chicken, and I would steer you towards the hot variety of it. I prefer the wing because I just think that the meat just handles the frying process better than boneless. And it's also a little bit more engaging in how you eat it. Just get in there and get messy and enjoy it.
Mm. Okay, well, listen, I don't want to keep you... there's more milling to be done, I'm sure. thanks for taking the time.
Hey, thank you. Pleasure.
Londonist Out Loud is sponsored by Audible. To claim your free audiobook from a range of 60,000 titles, try the Audible service on 30-day free trial. Audiobooks can be saved as MP3s and played on your compatible phone, tablet, or desktop, or burned to CD, and they're yours to keep. For your free audiobook, go to www.audible.co.uk/Londonist and click through.
You're listening to Londonist Out Loud. I'm N. Quentin Wolfe, and we're at the Feast Food Festival in Tobacco Dock, East London. Ahead of me in the crowd is Londonist food editor Ben Norham, who's stuffing his face with chicken wings. Seems to be appreciating them. I haven't really got a look in. There's a big pile of bones building up here.
They are very good. That's all I can say right now because I'm busy.
We're heading downstairs. And one of the things that the stallholders have told us off mic is that whilst there's a good crowd here, apparently the last couple of days have been thronging. It's been impossible to squeeze your way through the crowd. Down onto a botanical cocktails and saucy British tapas bar. Well, this is turning into a bit of a Londonist convention, I'm realising. There was a Londonist office party the other day which didn't gather together half as many staff. The offer of food, I think, has brought everybody out of the woodwork. I'm going to attempt to coax Lindsay Clark, one of our most senior figures, out of her self-imposed silence. Lindsay, you traditionally don't come this side of the mic. We're at the Botanical Cocktails Bar. What's caught your eye?
I have some vegetarian tapas.
Yes, what have we got there? Beetroot?
Beetroot and thyme meatballs with mint and lemon sauce. And all sorts of delicious-looking things, actually.
Honey mustard sausages and beetroot quinoa. Yeah, this does sound good. And chocolate ganache tart with edible flowers.
Edible flowers are good.
Well, that's Lindsay's contribution to the podcast for this year. Sorted. Now, is this the same bar on both sides? No, the marshmallowists are on the other side. I have just tasted a little bit of heaven. We're behind the scenes at Christabel's, and I've just tasted a zinger, and that is one of the most refreshing things that's passed my lips in a long time. What are you trying there, Ben?
I've got the Feast Flame.
What do you reckon?
Yeah, I'm really enjoying it. Ginger beer, lime, vodka, really good, really refreshing.
With us, I believe we have the Christabel.
Hi.
Hello, how are you?
And welcome. Yeah, we've had such a fantastic 4 days of Feast, and it's the birth of our bar, so it was built the day we arrived, finished, the bolts were still going on, and it's just we've had a really great reception, and people have just loved kind of being involved in the creation of their cocktails. They can pick the herbs that they want to add into them, and then we've had a lot of fun being creative and coming up with the syrups, and we've made our thyme, rosemary, ginger and lemongrass syrup, which we add to all the cocktails, and people have just been really, really loving it.
Now, you say the bar has sort of started here. Do you mean that this is the first iteration of Christabel's?
Yeah, it's christening at Feast, yeah.
How good are people at combining flavours?
Do you know what? They're not actually that great. I had someone yesterday who, because we're doing a build your own, so you can sort of go step by step, and someone just did a rosemary syrup and soda and vodka, and I was like, actually, do you think maybe you want to add a bit of ginger or mix it up a bit? So we've sort of tried to encourage when people build their own, just make a few suggestions just to take them on their way.
How do you go about making a syrup out of herbs?
Well, it is quite a technical process because you have to sort of boil it up, cool it, boil it up again, cool it, and it takes like sort of maybe 7 hours to like get it really infused and strong. And we do it 3 days before so that they kind of marinate and so the flavour is really intensified.
So you're making a cup of tea essentially?
Yeah, exactly. A cup of tea and a cocktail.
Now, what I'd like to know, I gather you've been going a few days here at the festival.
Yeah, we have since Thursday.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah. How come everybody looks so fresh?
I can't explain that. I may look fresh, but I'm absolutely exhausted.
Everyone's putting on a very good front then.
Yeah, yeah. But do you know what? I think it's the spirit of it. It's the sun. Like, everyone's sort of... It's just a great atmosphere. It's buzzy and, like, people are drinking, they're eating, and, like, how can you not be happy with great food and cocktails?
We can presume then that you've been on quite a sharp learning curve. What have you been learning?
We have been learning... Well, we've learned that... the names of our cocktails, we've got our flirt, which has been really popular because it's just sort of, interestingly, it was called a rose rock and roll, and when it was called that, it wasn't that popular. Now it's a flirt, it's literally been flying off the shelves. So I've learned that names are key, and just kind of like having fantastic bar staff as well, like Minerva here is just so great, and great with people is so important, and just quick and... Yeah. Also, having three girls behind a bar, we were saying, is you're so used to having men mixologists and stuff, but I think that's also been maybe something a bit different with a botanical bar to have. Yeah. So.
I was trying to get my head around, because it looks as though you're offering two different sorts of product here. There's the cocktails, but there's also tapas. What's the connection between them?
So the tapas, we've got like thyme and beetroot tapas, and I make a whole range of relishes. So that's with a yogurt, cucumber, mint, lemon juice and garlic sauce. And the whole idea is that the tapas are meant to complement the cocktails and kind of... sort of play on your taste buds. So that was the whole idea. And when I go to a bar, I don't necessarily want like a big meal. I quite want to like nibble a bit, but not a crisp or a nut. So that was just my idea, that we wanted to combine like delicious little bites with the cocktails.
We don't have to name names, but is there anyone in the festival that you would regard as a direct competitor?
They're all really different, actually. The gin and tonic bar, maybe slightly, but their stuff's delicious, and they're just doing one thing. So, no, I wouldn't say... I mean, I guess everyone selling alcohol, you're all competing, but we're all quite different, so it's been good in that sense. Yeah.
I'm curious to know, because you and Minerva have got fantastically unusual names. What about your third member of staff?
Sicily Violet.
I'm not disappointed.
Sicily Violet, yeah.
Final question, I suppose. How will you know that this weekend has been a success? And you're already giving a vibe that it has been. What's success?
Do you know what? Part of the whole success of it is the reception that we've had, and like the bloggers and journalists who have been really interested, and even the people. Like, actually, we've had several repeat customers, like in the evenings especially, who just come back for more and more and more cocktails, which I guess is like a fantastic sign that they're good little concoctions. But also we've just been busy, which has been great.
Yes, that's the acid test, isn't it?
Yeah. That's the bottom line, I guess.
And you've got a few people waiting at the counter there, so I'm going to let you get back to them.
Yeah, we've got quite something in the audience.
Yes, it's the flirt cocktail has worked its magic. These two people have never met each other before.
Yeah, no, never met each other and having quite a good time in the queue.
I feel we ought to avert our eyes. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Well, clutching my delicious non-alcoholic cocktail from Christabel's, we're heading back upstairs. We were on a mezzanine level halfway up the staircase there. Now we're back on the gallery, and I'm following Ben through a crowd that seems slightly thinned out, perhaps. I would guess it must be 2:30 in the afternoon. It looks as though the lunch rush is calming a little bit. Still plenty of people around. A raging fire on the griddle at Dirty Bones. I hope that's intentional. And we've made an important discovery. Ben, what have we found?
I think I've just found a statue of a boy with a tiger, which I read about on Wikipedia, but missed on the way in.
Yes, I've heard about this. I was going to be very sorry if we didn't see it. Well, I'm seeing a statue of a bear. Oh, there we go.
There he is, looking spectacular in his glory, standing at a part of the show that doesn't have so many producers, but that makes it really, doesn't it?
He's, yes, defiantly standing in front of a tiger who's sitting on his hind legs, one paw raised. And if we were down there, we could read the inscription in front of it and find out what on earth that's all about.
We could do. Do you want to go down?
No, too easy. We're looking for... We found, I should say, the other two producers whom we intend to interview. One of them is absolutely chock-a-block at the moment, the waffle stall. And we're using the festival map to try and find our final producer, and they've disappeared. They're not where they should be. Or we're not where we should be. And we're down the staircase into an area paved with large slate flags. Let's find out what this statue's all about. In the early years of the 19th century, it says, a full-grown Bengal tiger, having just arrived at Jamrach's Emporium, burst open his wooden transit box and quietly trotted down the road. Everybody scattered except an 8-year-old boy who, having never seen such a large cat, went up to it with the intent of stroking his nose. A tap of the great soft paw stunned the boy, and picking him up by his jacket, the tiger walked down a side alley. Mr. Jamrach, having discovered the empty box, came running up and, thrusting his bare hands into the tiger's throat, forced the beast to let his captive go. The little boy was unscathed and the subdued tiger was led back to his cage. In memory of Jamrach, any money collected from the fountain will be donated to the World Wildlife Fund. I think they've made a basic mistake here because the fountain seems to have been filled in with a flower bed. I'm not sure about this as a fundraising exercise.
Have you seen the bear?
Oh, right. A bear, and somebody has left a copy of a John Grisham novel for the bear to read.
Thoughtful.
Over 100 years ago, this is Jamrach again, over 100 years ago on what was then called Ratcliffe Highway, near to this spot stood Jamrach's Emporium. This unique shop sold not only the most varied collection of curiosities, but also traded in wild animals such as alligators, tigers, elephants, monkeys and birds. Jamrach's was known to seafarers throughout the world who, when their ship docked in London, would bring artefacts from distant lands in the knowledge that Mr. Jamrach would be a willing purchaser. The animals were housed in iron cages and were well looked after until they were bought by zoological institutes and naturalist collectors.
Interesting. Should we go and eat some more?
Yeah. I feel like we've done our duties to history. Ben, what's going on with our fifth producer? We seem to have lost them.
Smith & Sinclair, they are alcoholic sweet producers. We are struggling to track them down, but I think we've just located them on the map.
Well, we're back upstairs again. It's proving to be quite the appropriate workout to get rid of some of that chicken.
I think we follow our smell towards the chicken, then go slightly to the right, we might be there.
I guess so.
Am I asking these questions? We are, we've found it, basically. The Smith & Sinclair Alcoholic Sweetie Stall, or Cocktail Confectioners, as I think they prefer to be known, but it's Alcoholic Sweeties as far as I'm concerned. Mel, hi.
Hello.
What's going on this very modest stall?
So right now we've only got our mixed boxes for sale, which is 6 of our flavours. It's 2 whiskey, 2 gin and 2 rum cocktails. We've also got a special. We've teamed up with the Duppy Share Rum Company, who launched last month, and we're doing their signature, which is rum, lime, nutmeg and aromatic bitters.
How many times have you said that in your life?
About 5 million times.
And to whom? Is it like everybody who crops up at the...
Yeah,
who rocks up at the store?
A lot of nans, but a range of audiences. Basically anyone we can sort of grab and harass, we sell to. Mm.
There's a lot of branding going on here. You've got the branded T-shirts, and the table here is, unlike most of the others that have got a stripy awning or all sorts of paraphernalia, this is a very neat sort of arrangement. We have a stack of purple pastel boxes, or pastel boxes as well, and some of the small orange fellas here. Now, are you the originator of the company? Or
yes, me and a chef, Emile Bernard. He created the concept of the recipe, and he produces in a production kitchen. We make right now about 1,000 to 1,200 a day. We do everything ourselves, from making to packaging to sales to marketing, and it's just the two of us. We bring on freelance staff to help us with sales. We're right now at Secret Cinema as well, so we're tag teaming our summer sales, basically.
So you've had a time of it?
I'm not sleeping.
And of course, there's been this whole Secret Cinema debacle with cancelled and postponed shows and all that stuff, so that must have wrong-footed you as well, I presume.
It was only the first week, and they did give the vendors a bit more notice than they did the audience, but the show is amazing. We've now been there a week, and sales are booming, and the audiences are lovely, and it's a really key target market for us. We've actually had tons of people come to Feast who've also seen us at Secret Cinema, so knowing that we're getting that cross-promotion is a really nice thing for us.
How does that fit into the Back to the Future show that is Secret Cinema's offering this year?
So we're part of Hill Valley. We own an alcoholic candy shop as part of Hill Valley and are walking around with our candy girl trays. We are absolutely immersed in the show itself. People approach our sellers can approach them. We've all got a character. I myself am Alma Whittaker.
Very important that we know the surname as well, yes.
It is, yeah.
What else do we know about Alma Whittaker?
Not much. She's a resident and she can be a transfer from England. She transferred as a student to the high school, but I'm out of university because obviously I'm over 21 because I'm selling alcohol.
Oh, yeah, I hadn't thought of that. Right.
Yeah.
You were saying obviously. Yeah, so you've really worked out the backstory. That's kind of alarming. And so can we have a look at the sweeties?
Absolutely. So in our mixed boxes, we've got a combination. We've got our gin elderflower, and it's coated in a thyme-infused sugar. We've got our berry daiquiri, which is in a pink and black peppercorn coating. Our whiskey and amaretto.
Can we linger on that one again? Pink and black peppercorn dressing.
Yeah, so we do all our own sugar coatings from scratch. So we blend and dehydrate all the spices, fruits, sherbets, and mix it in with a certain acid and the sugar coatings to either give it that sour bite or the spice or the mellow floral consistency.
I don't know if this is cheeky. Is there any chance of tasting this pepper one? Is that possible?
Yeah.
A lot of the flavours that we've been introduced to today, I've sort of got a rough idea of how they might come out tasting, but the combination of sweet and pepper, I really can't imagine.
Yeah, it's a very common thing to do with drinks, cocktails, so we wanted to completely imitate the experience of drinking certain cocktails and the tones that and the flavours that happen in your mouth in sequence. So we deconstruct cocktails and put them, it's not like we're getting a cocktail mix and putting it into a sweet. Our berry daiquiri, for instance, is dark rum, grenadine and strawberry natural flavouring into the pastel, and then we dehydrate the mixed black and pink peppercorns, blitz that into the sugar coating, and then you get all the different levels of drinking a cocktail but in an edible way.
I don't know if I've asked the wrong question here, but you're putting on male latex gloves and you've taken a knife out. I fear I may be in trouble.
This isn't Dexter, just hygiene.
We are bisecting one of the pastels now. Thank you very much. So this is the one that you just described?
And this is my actual personal favourite. My business partner's is the Spring Clean, and that's a gin elderflower and thyme, but mine's definitely the berry daiquiri. And what we say is, when you're eating it, let it melt in the mouth while you're chewing, because the rum is built into the gelatin itself, so as the pastel digests, you really get that rummy warmth in your mouth. It's not like a drink which coats your mouth instantly, it is different. And obviously, it typically takes a half an hour of a time delay to get the drunk on the go. So they're Moorish, so you sort of have three, don't feel that tipsy yet, you have two more and then you can't drive.
I'm really glad we left you till the end of the broadcast. That's absolutely delicious. I'm not going to attempt to do the wine tasting vocabulary or anything like that. That's simply very tasty and a very complex flavour gradually unfolding on the palate.
Good, I'm glad you like it.
Can you tell me a bit about the process of putting these together? What sort of atmosphere is going on there with the two of you slaving over all of these pastels?
It's a fun job. It's definitely not boring at any point in the day. We do have to make sure we take a lot of air breaks, because obviously if you're doing sort of 10 different batches and you're standing over the fumes of the alcohol, our chef has definitely been hungover by about 4 p.m. So we make...
Well, hang on, but before that though, you're drunk all day, that's the problem.
Yeah, but you can work through the drunk, it's the hangover that's hard to get past.
You say it's a fun job. It sounds like that could be the death of kind of creative spirit, surely, this industrial side to it.
Well, you're basically a big kid. We're selling sweets to adults. I mean, it puts a smile on everyone's face. By no means are we marketing this as a healthy product, but it definitely, if something's going to be bad for you, you might as well make sure it tastes so good that it's worth it. And that's sort of our whole company ethos. We're a young company. We only started in January. We have been snowballed into the alcohol industry. We did, within a month of launching, 20,000 for Imbibe Live. So that was working out of church kitchens, school kitchens, basically wherever we could get enough space. We're now in a proper production facility in Swiss Cottage, which is awesome because we live in North London anyway. And it works really well for us. We've got a packaging facility there. I mean, it is just the two of us, but at least we have the space to not be doing it in our house.
Right, and by the sounds of it, you could have potentially come unstuck with such rapid expansion early on.
We could have, yeah. We had to overcome a lot of hurdles. We were really aware of not producing too much too soon and not being able to keep up with demand. So we've always held back, and now we're launching to Harvey Nichols in September. And our growth has been organic. We've just made sure that the markets we hit are exactly our right target audience, and we'll only ever take on enough orders that if we need more chefs, we still have the capacity to do that. We're not overproducing and we're not overselling.
Who do you see then, and we've got a perfect opportunity to cast our eyes around a great variety of different foodstuffs here, who do you see as being natural allies or on the same sort of palate as your produce?
I guess you would see it as a post-coffee treat instead of a chocolate, in essence, or even an aperitif, as you'd have a cocktail before a meal. You might now have an edible cocktail. In the drinks industry, we love White Lion bars. We love the experimental nature of what they do and the creativity that they absolutely sweat out and emanate. They're a unique bar in Hoxton. It's Ryan Chetty, who's the owner and front man of the company, and they produce everything from scratch down to the spirits. They're a no ice, no slice bar, and we love what they do. We like to work with them at a lot of events. In terms of food, I guess we would be considered a confectionery product, but because we're so different from chocolate liqueurs and we're really trying to educate people on the difference between what we're doing and chocolate liqueurs, we would never want to say that they're an ally.
I can see you've had a steady stream of custom the whole time we've been here, so I know you don't want to be too far away from saying your sentence again and again.
It's okay. I've got two members of staff today. Friends are good staff members.
I noticed one of them is not wearing the T-shirt. Is this a sort of a rebel staff member?
No, this isn't. He's not gone awry from the company. We just didn't have one spare today.
I've had exactly the same problem with my lot.
I think the guy yesterday sweated in his too much, so it was a busy day yesterday.
Oh, that's not what you want on festival broadcast.
I'm going to put it on this guy today. We'll let him wear something fresh.
Alma stroke Mel, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Londonist Out Loud is available free as a stream at Londonist.com or a weekly download via iTunes. Hit us up on Facebook at Londonist Out Loud, tweet at Londonist Sound, and check out images of our guests via the Londonist Out Loud stream on Instagram.
Well, off mic, we've just been discovering a lot more about Mel and her media interactions, and it sounds as though the sweaty T-shirt thing, which she was a bit worried about having said, was the most minor of a series of media indiscretions she's committed today. One of them involving Rehypnol, but I'm going to say no more than that. We were hoping to get one final producer in on the podcast, and we're at their stall now. It's Waffle On, and if you could see the expressions on the faces of the Waffle On staff, then you'd know that they're not to be waffled with at this point in time. They have a queue stretching three times around the building. They're producing away. Very, very popular, but very, very busy. And frankly, no chance they're going to be able to talk to us.
Yeah, no, they are well and truly in demand here. I think it's dessert time at Tobacco Dock, and everyone's running to Waffle On. Not, they do savoury as well, so who knows? Maybe it's some people are still waking up and getting their morning fix. But
yeah, no, I would say I can understand why they've got the queue here. Slow roasted duck waffles with fresh plum sauce, dry cured bacon with Canadian maple syrup. That sounds absolutely delicious.
Do you want to join the queue?
Yeah, it's not a bad idea, actually. We're standing outside a fire-eating tent, and there's a chap with a twirled moustache and muscled biceps and a top hat who looks like he's about to start, and we're in his way, so the queue for the waffles is looking good. So we're going to tie off here at Tobacco Dock from the Feast Festival. What's been your impression of the festival overall, Ben?
I've thoroughly enjoyed it. I think I've been to a few festivals, and food festivals I should say, and the atmosphere here really is second to none in the building, with the sun shining outside, everyone sitting around enjoying a cocktail or a pint or two and just browsing the stalls. It's a really nice day out, I'd say, not just a festival. Mm. I think Feast run shows at least annually. They do others as well, so it's one to look out for. They've been around for a few years now, and I'm sure they'll be announcing more soon. And lots of other street food events around London as well. Of course, Feast isn't the only one. There are plenty of things going on at the moment, and they're definitely a good event, good to go to.
Well, I've certainly enjoyed myself, and we are going to attempt to bag ourselves some food before the best of it is sold out. So from the Feast Festival here at Tobacco Dock, Ben Norham, thanks very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And that's all for this week. My thanks for this week to Ben Norham, Ross Clark, Christabel Beeson, Lindsay Clark, Lyle Schwass and Mel Goldsmith. Thanks to Mark Barr and Bernie Barclay. Theme and incidental music was by Songs from the Howling Sea. I'm N. Quentin Wolfe.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.